At a time of upheaval in the Middle East, be it Bahrain, Syria, Yemen, Iraq, etc., one country figures prominently, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. While the U.S. and many Western governments consider the kingdom a strategic ally and key to regional stability, others are more skeptical. From its more aggressive military involvement in regional states to its espousing of the Wahhabi Salafist ideology, which has led to the rise of terrorist groups like the Al-Qaeda and Daesh, Saudi policies have lately come under criticism. In this edition of The Debate, we take a closer look at the role Saudi Arabia is playing in a volatile Middle East and what its policies mean for the region. Well, let me start off by introducing our guest. Joining us from London is the director of the Shafaqna Institute for Middle Eastern Studies, Catherine Shakdam. And joining us from studios in Beirut is political analyst Jihad Mourakadeh. Many thanks for joining us here in this edition of The Debate. Ms. Shakdam, I'll start off with you, if I may. How do you interpret the role of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in regional affairs at a very volatile time? Is its more aggressive military involvement and interference a good thing?
Well, if I may echo Ayatollah Khamenei's address today, I will say that Saudi Arabia is actually the root of all evil today. It goes beyond, you know, just colonialism or imperialism. What Saudi Arabia has done is actually betray an entire faith and actually sell out the scriptures, Islamic scriptures, you know, to the wolf of imperialism and capitalism. What they have done is rebrand and redact the holy scriptures. What they have done is set people against each other, you know, for the sake of sectarianism, so that their house could actually impose their own authority over not just the Middle East, but the Islamic world. What they have done is genocide against Yemen, Bahrain, Syria, and many countless other nations, as they have oppressed and repressed people and communities in the name of Wahhabism, in the name of imperialism. And everything they have done has been an abomination, quite frankly. They are not even a political entity as such. They are a violent, repressive theocracy, which claims the self of Islam, but which in fact is following actually the religion of Muhammad Abdul Wahhab, which is not Islam as far as I'm concerned, because Wahhabism stands on everything which Islam not only denies and rejects, but actually hates and opposes.
Right. Mr. Mourakadeh, what is your opinion? Same question. Ms. Shakdam is not very forgiving of Saudi Arabia.
She has every right not to be, in the sense that she has a very peculiar way of looking at the situation in the area. And on this basis, I think that Saudi Arabia is doing a great job in working with the United Nations to secure peace and stability in the area and in the region. In the case of Yemen, for example, it was the Houthis who moved against the regime in Saudi Arabia, in Yemen, and this was condemned by the United Nations. So when Saudi Arabia works with the United Nations, it is not creating trouble.
Go ahead, Ms. Shakdam. You're shaking your head.
No, this is insane to me. How can you even justify the genocide, the murder, the obliteration of not just the people and civilians? You're talking about 26 million people in Yemen have been put under humanitarian blockade, have been bombed from the air.
Who's
just
genocide,
because Saudi Arabia could not stomach having a democracy south of its border. Do not talk to me about this. You're not even worthy to say their name, sir, because they are Yemen resistance movement. They are actually moving against Saudi Arabia where no one else
has stand
without shoes. They have stand without weapons.
All they have is
their pride, and they're doing a great job at actually standing up for Islam.
No one else is doing it in the region.
And I'm sorry, but Saudi Arabia is not Islam. Saudi Arabia has slapped the name of its
not
house
at all.
Under
not
the hijab and has claimed itself a nation
not
which is not its
all.
Nation. They are tyrants of a nation.
Not
they are
at
the
Yazid
of today.
Not at all.
And Yemen today is standing up.
These are
the
a bunch
today.
Of revolutionaries.
Yemen today is standing where
these
others
are a bunch
before.
Of thugs.
All right. In order for us to be able to understand what each of you are saying, Mr. Mourakadeh, I would suggest that you let Ms. Shakdam finish her thoughts and we will come back to you.
No, I would suggest that you let me speak too.
Go ahead, Mr. Mourakadeh.
Okay, I'm talking about a bunch of thugs, a bunch of revolutionaries who have been supported by outside forces to take over the legitimate elected government of Yemen. So what do you do about the population of Yemen which has elected President Mansour Abdullah Hadi?
No, they didn't.
What do you do about them? Are they also thugs? The Houthis are a minority who are overtaking the legally elected government. And this is not according to me. This is according to the United Nations. So I don't care what you think. The United Nations think otherwise. Russia, China, the US, France, and the UK. Now, if all of these people are irrelevant in your opinion is irrelevant in my eyes.
Go ahead, Ms. Shakhtar.
Well, what I would like to say is, like, my opinion is actually, yes, indeed, irrelevant. All that matters is what Yemen wants. All that matters is what Yemen wants for its future. All that matters is that Abdullah bin Mansour Hadi was elected president in a one-man election in 2012 for a two-year mandate, which I think he overstepped. He resigned twice and ran away twice. He ran away to Saudi Arabia so that Riyadh could declare an illegitimate war on Yemen.
No.
I don't care, sir, what the United Nations say. I don't care what Zionism say. I don't care what Wahhabism say.
Well, it is irrelevant what you care about.
Fighting because Yemen is self-defending its nation. Yemen has the
Saudi
right to
self-defense.
What you're trying to do, sir, is to criminalize resistance. And what you cannot stomach is that today the resistance movement of Yemen is actually standing on Yemen ground, which Saudi Arabia has claimed for itself. And those provinces are called Asir, Najran, and another one. And I forgot the program, I'm sorry.
But
they are standing on Yemen ground, and you can't stomach it. You're getting very aggravated and angry.
All right, let me just jump in there. Let's not speak over each other, Mr. Morakade. I'm warning you for a second time. I don't want to get sucked into making this a debate on Yemen. Let me just move on. Mr. Morakade, what are the driving forces when it comes to Saudi Arabia, though? While they claim to be supporting democracy by bombarding Yemen, they're propping up a dictatorship through their tanks in Bahrain. What do you make of that?
Is it a dictatorship in Bahrain?
It's not elected.
No, madam. Let me explain to you Bahrain, because it seems that you are uninformed. The Al-Khalifa dynasty has been ruling Bahrain for 300 years. Now, if this is a dictatorship, then what do you say about the other families and in the area? 300 years, Madam Al-Khalifa, have been around.
So?
Is that a dictatorship?
Yes. Yes.
Well, Mr. Morakade, Ms. Shakhtar thinks so.
Well,
yes, I do, because so if you base yourself, the definition of a democracy is having a people electing their leaders. And I don't care how long they've been, you know, they could stay for a millennia if you want. It does not make it democratic. It doesn't make it legitimate. What you're saying is that just because someone has sat long enough on the throne, that it makes it legal, that it makes it legitimate. I mean, sir, I'm sorry, but you're denying people the very right to democracy that you're actually asking for yourself. It's actually completely insane to believe that it's okay for one side, you know, of the world to actually have a democracy and to have a say in how their country is being governed. And it's not okay when we're talking about Saudi Arabia, it's not okay when you're talking about the Gulf monarchies, just because they have enough money to silence the press, just because they have enough money to actually buy your silence and your ideas, just because they can. It doesn't make it right. You know, I believe in something called natural law. I believe in something which is grander than ourselves, and that people, God himself, has actually given us the right to choose for ourselves. So who are you, sir, to actually deny it from other people?
Very good question. May I answer?
Go ahead, Mr. Morakade.
Okay. It seems that the lady in London has different ideas about who governs what and whom and where. When the local Shia population in Bahrain is rising against the regime, which is the ruling regime, and when it is getting weapons and training in order to overthrow the regime, if this is okay with you, then why is it not okay in other countries in the area? As called in the revolution, then look across the Persian Gulf, and what did they do with the revolutionary, the Kurdish revolutionary? Recently, they hanged 20 of them. So it's revolutionary. It's convenient to you. It's not a revolution. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Ms. Shakhtar.
No, I'm just saying that you're trying to just completely derail the conversation to another subject. We're talking about the Gulf monarchies
here.
We're talking about Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has claimed a legitimacy which is not its own by calling apostates those very people who actually follow the house of God, because they want to claim the house of God for themselves. They want people to not follow the house of God because they want people to pay allegiance to their own house. Don't you think this is insanity? Don't you think this is apostasy? Don't you think this is hypocritical beyond belief? Don't you think that the Islamic world has a right to its own tradition? Don't you think that Saudi Arabia has absolutely no right whatsoever to actually deny people the very right that God himself has inscribed in the scripture, which is the right to choose? What Saudi Arabia has done is impose a Wahhabist sick model onto nations across the world because they want to obliterate people's right to think for themselves. They want to obliterate people's right to religious freedom. What they want to do is to create a society of slaves which will bow to their house forever and ever. And I'm sorry, sir, but some people actually do want to think for themselves. Some people want to reclaim Islam for themselves because they do believe there is something greater out there than to bow to the house of Saud. And they do believe there is something greater out there than to be a slave to a house which has no legitimacy whatsoever, other than the fact that they happen to sit on billions and billions of dollars. You know, there are such people as Ayatollah Khamenei who actually want to stand up for the truth, who actually stand up for Islam, who actually speak for Islam, because they understand what it is to be a leader. They understand that being in leadership position means that you actually stand and speak for the people that you do represent and who you're responsible for. It doesn't mean to do what you want. It doesn't mean to do what is right for you. It means having the courage to do what is right for other people. Right. And I do believe that you need to listen and read to this letter that he actually executed today, because it speaks of Islam. It is of Islam, and he represents Islam. Thank you very much.
Let me just jump in there. Go ahead, Mr. Morakadeh.
I'm just wondering what makes the lady in London an authority on Islam, and who is supposed to decide on Islam and who is not supposed to decide on Islam.
Which is why I'm referring to Ayatollah Khamenei as my leader. Thank you.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Morakadeh.
Sorry?
Finish your thoughts.
Well, I'm sorry. It so happens that the Sunnis in the Arab world do not agree with you, and it may well be that other denominations, the Shias and so on, may agree with you, and that's the root of the problem. So why are you deciding that one is right and the other is wrong?
All right, let me just jump in there on that point that you've just made, Mr. Morakadeh, as far as dividing this issue into a Sunni-Shia conflict. Right now, as we do know, there was a conference that was held in Grozny of Sunni clerics. More than 200 Sunni clerics attended that conference, and they rejected the Salafist Wahhabi ideology being not a part of Sunni Islam. This is something that's drawn the irk and wrath of Saudi Arabia, so to speak. The Grand Mufti there condemned that statement. But again, it just goes to show that it's not as simple as a Sunni-Shia divide.
Well, it goes to show that you have very different moves in Islam, very different movements, very different philosophies. Obviously, those people who met in Grozny probably represent whatever they represent, and there are other people who represent something else who did not meet in Grozny. So this is not an issue. The real issue is not Sunni Shia. The real issue is the unity of Islam. The real issue is the political unity of Islam.
Well, Mr. Morakadeh, then when we're speaking of the unity of the Muslim world, at the one hand, you're speaking of an armed group in Yemen which deserves to be bombed by Saudi Arabia because it dared to rise up against what you claim was a democratically elected government. But at the same time, Saudi Arabia is supporting small armed factions which have now become a huge problem in Syria, which have raised their arms against a democratically elected government.
Well, first of all, in Syria, it is not democratically elected government.
Oh,
it is a bullshit government elected by 99% of the. It is not democratic and never been democratic. And if it was democratic, half the population of Syria will not be fighting against it. So forget about the democratic in Syria. We know, we live here, it's not democratic. Now, with regards to what you just said in Yemen, it is not me who has decided whether it is legally elected or not legally elected. It is the United Nations. Now, the United Nations are more advised and more informed that the lady in London and myself, now, no. irrespective, what no, do sorry. You think, there is a rule of law.
Go ahead, Ms. Shakram. It seems that
This is insane to me that, you know, your guest here is actually trying to say that the UN supersedes the democratic rights and sovereignty of a nation. This is insane. The United Nations is there to actually make sure that sovereign nations are not, you know, attacked or that their you know, law are not trampled over. The United Nations does not make things legitimate. The United Nations doesn't decide who's supposed to rule, who's supposed to be elected. The United Nations is just there as a keeper of international law. I think you need to kind of, you know, rethink your understanding of international law, sir. I'm
who
sorry.
Decides
but, you know,
what
no
is,
one can dictate
who decides
Bahrain,
what
the... how Bahrain wants to be ruled. No one can dictate Yemen how they want to be governed. You know, this is the very principles of democracy, which, by the way, the United Nations is supposed to be standing on and representing. So don't talk to me about the United Nations. The United Nations has failed completely because the United Nations has been sold out to Saudi Arabia. And now when you're talking about sectarianism, I will say that, yes, there is, you know, we need to have unity in Islam, but then I will argue that there's always been unity in Islam because there's only one book and there's only one Islam and there's only one God. So you can't have many Islam and you can't have many anything because there's only one book, one God, one house, and there's only one faith to be following, which is his. So unless you're actually praying to someone else, and that, in which case we're going to have a very different conversation altogether, but there's only one God. And the last time I checked, Prophet Muhammad was his prophet. So there is no debate, theological debate to be had. The only debate that we're having is that we have the House of Saud who is trying to reclaim the legitimacy of a house which is not his house. What the House of Saud is trying to do is to create tension within Islam because he wants to reclaim Sunni Islam for itself when it doesn't actually belong to Sunni Islam. And actually Sunni Islam decided to denounce it because they can't even stomach the horror that Wahhabism is. So do not talk to me about sectarianism, sir. And if you want the truth, I mean, if you really want to go one step further, you know, you should learn that actually the school of thought of the Hanafi and the Maliki is actually drawing from Imam Sajjad. So if you really want to talk about Shia and Sunni, you need to learn about your own history, sir, because they're actually basing the entire jurisprudence of their school of thought on Shia Islam, if you really want to know about your history, sir. So don't talk to me about
that. Okay, we're quickly running out of time. I'm going to just jump in there. Mr. Morakade, in 1 minute or less, if possible, we've also seen that Saudi Arabia has recently made overtures to the Israeli regime in order to form an alliance to meet their mutual strategic interests. What do you make of that?
I'm extremely for it. I support it 100%. And I think if the Saudi relation with Israel could help the Palestinian question and help find a solution to the Palestinian issue, it is extremely powerful and it is the best deal that could ever happen to the Palestinian. I don't think that the lady in London has ever done anything for the Palestinians in the, since the 60, 70 years that this issue has existed. So
I didn't create the issue, so I'm sorry, no, I can't bring a solution to it.
Right, Ms. Shakram, in 1 minute or less, to your opinion on this strategic partnership between Saudis and the Israelis, is this a positive step? Will it help the Palestinians, or is it something altogether different?
It's not going to help anybody. I mean, can you imagine? You have the marriage of Wahhabism and Zionism. I could not think about something more horrible and more heinous than this alliance. And by the way, there is no strategic alliance to be had anyhow because they've been friends since forever. Zionism is an extension of Wahhabism. Wahhabism is Zionism, except it's expressed in Islam rather than in Judaism. I mean, Zionism has hijacked Judaism, which is a beautiful religion, by the way, the same way Wahhabism has hijacked Islam. So I think for me that you have the alliance of two monsters to create a greater evil. How can you say that it's going to help the Palestinians? The Palestinians have been, you know, denied the right to choose for themselves. They are actually standing in bona fide, you know, death camp. This is what Palestine has become. Palestine has become a prisoner, you know, within its own border. They're actually under occupation. So don't talk to me about an alliance about Zionism and Wahhabism and say it's a good thing. It's not a good thing for anyone. How can you be a traitor to your own people in such a manner? It's absolutely abominable to me to see you stand here and say
this
thing.
You are the traitor.
All right, I'm going to have to stop
you
guys over
here.
We have run out of time. That was the director of the Shafaqna Institute for Middle Eastern Studies, Catherine Shakram, joining us from London. And joining us from our studios in Beirut was political analyst Jihad Morakade. Many thanks indeed for participating in this edition of The Debate. For me and the entire team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.